TED Disciplines of Salvation 139. Definite and proper mental exercise will increase mental capac. ITY. In the field of mental culture, the Greeks enjoyed a supremacy never approached by any other race. They built gymnasiums not only for the culture of the body but also for the mind, the result being their overwhelming superiority in the realm of creative thought. In its philosophic aspect, concentration implies that all the life activities are centered upon the noblest goal and held in this state of fixation until the goal is achieved. Consecration of life to definite purpose is indispensable to accomplishment. Philosophy assures its disciples that when man, through discrimination, has discovered the desired end and is willing to sacrifice every other interest to the attainment of that end, he will ultimately arrive at indissoluble union with the object of his desire. This is, of course, a superphysical truth. If a man devotes a lifetime of effort to amassing $1,000,000, he will not ultimately take upon himself the actual appearance of money. He will, however, gradually deteriorate until his life is susceptible of complete expression in terms of money. Through concentration, the life energies are coordinated upon the path of achievement, and success is in direct proportion to the power or degree of concentration. As the sun's rays concentrated by a burning glass are able to generate a high degree of heat, so man's mental and physical energies, when properly focused, give expression to potencies never dreamed of. In order to find the solitude considered essential to concentration, the hermits of old retired from the world of men and immured themselves in the depth of the forest or in caves high upon the mountainside. Surrounded by the tranquility of nature, they dreamed their lives away, finding in their solitary retirement a certain measure of peace. Of course, such an environment made the act of concentration comparatively easy, but for the same reason also made its efficacy less potent. By thus isolating himself from the social body, though never able to sever the physical bonds which still related him to it, the ascetic sought to approach divinity by retiring from a world which he mistakenly assumed to be the antipode of deity. 138 Lectures onancientphilosophy. Having through discrimination attained to a state of right mindfulness, it is necessary to maintain such state and project it to perfection through the aid of concentration. Having discovered the purpose of life through observation and discrimination, man consummates that purpose through concentration of his faculties upon that single end. To concentrate means simply to focalize all the energies upon an appointed task. The mental activities of most people are scattered like spray when they are confronted by the solid wall of that which is to be known. Individuals read books while their minds are concerned with other interests. When the intellect is laden with responsibility, ties which it cannot cast off, it ceases to function with the acuteness necessary for philosophic perception. The true thinker realizes that his mind is capable of fatigue, and while this fatigue may not be apparent in the grosser activities, it precludes the possibility of exactness in fine thinking. The normal mind works on the union basis of an 8-hour day, with time and a half off for overtime. For every period of intense effort, the mind must be compensated by a similar period of relaxation. The immature intellect of the average person must work slowly and orderly if it is to accomplish, for only a genius such as Julius Caesar can do a dozen things at once with any degree of success. It may truthfully be said that half an hour of profound mental activity is a day's work for the mind, and he who accomplishes this is entitled to be termed industrious in things of the intellect. We presume ourselves to be mentally active during ing the entire period of wakefulness, but in reality we wander in a sort of mental delirium in which the elements of conception and reflection tumble over each other in hopeless disorder. Only when confronted by some actual crisis does the mind rise to organized activity, and after the crisis is past, the resultant mental exhaustion is far greater than the average person realizes. About 15 minutes of unremitting mental concentration will exhaust the ordinary man. Only by special training can the intellectual faculties be elevated to the stage of prolonged, orderly functioning. As exercise scientifically chosen will strengthen an otherwise deficient physical member, so the disciplines of salvation 139. Definite and proper mental exercise will increase mental capacity. In the field of mental culture, the Greeks enjoyed a supremacy never approached by any other race. They built gymnasiums not only for the culture of the body but also for the mind, the result being their overwhelming superiority in the realm of creative thought. In its philosophic aspect, concentration implies that all the life activities are centered upon the noblest goal and held in this state of fixation until the goal is achieved. Consecration of life to definite purpose is indispensable to accomplishment. Philosophy assures its disciples that when man, through discrimination, has discovered the desired end and is willing to sacrifice every other interest to the attainment of that end, he will ultimately arrive at indissoluble union with the object of his desire. This is, of course, a superphysical truth. If a man devotes a lifetime of effort to amassing $1,000,000, he will not ultimately take upon himself the actual appearance of money. He will, however, gradually deteriorate until his life is susceptible of complete expression in terms of money. Through concentration, the life energies are coordinated upon the path of achievement, and success is in direct proportion to the power or degree of concentration. As the sun's rays concentrated by a burning glass are able to generate a high degree of heat, so man's mental and physical energies, when properly focused, give expression to potencies never dreamed of. In order to find the solitude considered essential to concentration, the hermits of old retired from the world of men and immured themselves in the depth of the forest or in caves high upon the mountainside. Surrounded by the tranquility of nature, they dreamed their lives away, finding in their solitary retirement a certain measure of peace. Of course, such an environment made the act of concentration comparatively easy, but for the same reason also made its efficacy less potent. By thus isolating himself from the social body, though never able to sever the physical bonds which still related him to it, the ascetic sought to approach divinity by retiring from a world which he mistakenly assumed to be the antipode of deity. He overlooked the obvious fact that he who finds not God among men will find him nowhere else. Rabindranath Tagore once expressed his aversion for the life of the ascetic by declaring that without love and companionship, the path of perfection was not worth walking at all. Concentration is not necessarily promoted by isolation, in fact. The acid test of concentration is to be found in the environment of confusion. If the mind can be deflected from its goal by the phantasm of surroundings, it is incapable of concentration, for when concentration is perfected, all the faculties are united in the performance of a definite task and no sense perceptions are left unoccupied with which to register external impressions. While concentration seems a Herculean effort to the mind that has not learned to coordinate its own parts, it is accomplished without effort by the trained thinker. In fact, many possess the faculty without the slightest knowledge of its existence. The musician lost in some rhapsody, the artist's spell bound before his unfolding creation, the philosopher oblivious to the world as he ponders the immensity of space, the Tra Gideon buried in his part, the financier frenziedly watching the blackboard of the stock exchange. All these not only exemplify the power of concentration but also its application to various ends, worthy or unworthy, according to the clarity of discrimination present. Regardless, however, of the factor of worthiness, wherever we find true concentration we find excellence. The faculty of concentration also manifests through continuity, the least developed faculty of the American people. Continuity means the sequential unfoldment of a project from germinal beginning to final consummation, or the resolution not to relinquish the task until it is completed. This faculty is frequently lacking in children and seriously interferes with their efficiency in later life. When work seems arduous, we quickly tire of it, or because we are not sure whether we really want the thing for which we strive, we soon doubt our desire to gain it. When we are certain of our own minds, and carry labor to its legitimate end, our undertaking will be crowned with success. 140 Lectures on Ancient Philosophy. The Disciplines of Salvation 141. We are then confronted with the problem of whether the finished product is an aid or a hindrance to us in our quest for reality. We should never concentrate upon any desired end until discrimination has revealed it to be the supreme ideal. For the universe avenges itself for the misuse of its agencies by forcing us to abide by our own decisions. The ultimate ideal of concentration is attained when all the external parts are turned inward toward the contemplation of self. When all the forces of the outer nature are thus united, then is generated the strength with which to achieve perfection. The diagram at the beginning of this chapter sets forth in the figurative terms of Platonism the relationship of the elements under discussion, the threefold divinity, the one, the beautiful, and the good manifests out of itself an inconceivable number of secondary triads. The secondary triad pertaining to absolute knowledge is composed of the rational principles now incorporated in the all too inadequate vehicles of philosophy, religion, and science. Thus it is demonstrated that philosophy partakes of the indivisible nature of the one, and hence serves as the reconciling, unifying agent, being symbolic of the point of absolute intellectual convergence. Theology likewise reflects to an imperfect degree the nature of the beautiful, a postulate substantiated by the emphasis placed upon the fine arts by nearly all religious systems. Science, in turn, imperfectly manifests the nature of the good, and those who minister at its altars lay special stress upon utilitarianism. Descending to the level of method, we find a new triad established, namely, discrimination, concentration, and observation. Discrimination may be conceived to be the goal of philosophy, concentration the goal of theology, and observation the goal of science. On the mental plane, these three may also be considered as indispensable factors in the acquisition of knowledge. Observation is the sharpest tool of science, concentration is essential to the esoteric doctrines of theology, discrimination is the secret of philosophic insight. In the world of physical arts and sciences, the one becomes mathematics, the first and most exact of all the sciences, which